Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Slash Filmcast. I'm David Chen, and with me today are
Spencer Hardware
and Jeff Cannata.
Welcome to the show, everyone. What we do here on this podcast, at least what we're going to do today, is we're going to be discussing some what we've been watching and then moving on into an in-depth review. This week, we'll be discussing Detective Pikachu, the latest movie based on a video game. And I really want to talk to you guys about whether or not this movie breaks the video game movie curse, right? Does it surpass every other video game movie that's ever been made and actually land with a good Rotten Tomatoes score, a high-quality film? We'll talk about whether or not Detective Pikachu is able to pull it off. But you can find, in the meantime, you can find more episodes of this podcast at slashfilmcast.com. Email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. And it's been a while since we've all been together on this podcast. Been a few weeks.
Right.
We did Endgame a couple weeks ago, and then last week we had a couple bonus episodes. Really grateful for all the people who joined us for those episodes. We've gotten a lot of great feedback about those episodes, and people writing in saying they enjoyed hearing like the variety of different perspectives about Avengers Endgame. Jeff Cannata, without spoiling anything, you have any more thoughts on Avengers Endgame? Because you weren't able to join us last week.
Oh, man. I mean, I've talked about it with every human I know. It has been it's been a whirlwind between that and Game of Thrones. It just feels like this weird tornado of geekdom over the last couple of weeks,
it's
right?
It's crazy to think about like Avengers Endgame, Game of Thrones, and the end of the Skywalker saga is all going to happen in 1 year, right? Am I right about that? I think that's right, right?
Yeah, one calendar year. And it's weird, too, because, you know, I've talked at length on the show over and over about how the whole Avengers phenomenon felt like this impossible thing that would never happen. And then Game of Thrones, as a book series, I remember vividly, I never let him forget this, by the way, bringing up how great they were to the Totally Rad Show guys. I think I've told this before, and saying, I think HBO is working on a TV series based on these books. And Dan Trachtenberg, big time Hollywood director, famously turned to me and said, it's never going to happen. Never going to happen. And I was like, what do you mean? I hear they're like making, he's like, are you kidding? It's never happening. That'll never happen. And here it is, the biggest television show in the world. And now
well,
it's
Jeff,
finally.
It does seem like you got the last laugh, but in a more meaningful, tangible way, Dan got the last laugh.
Why? Because the last season has been disappointing? Is that what you're referring to, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, that's one way to interpret what I said, yes. So anyway, a lot of crazy stuff going on. But Jeff, you weren't here on last week's episode of the podcast. A lot of people missed you. We got like dozens of letters being like, where's Jeff? Where's Jeff?
None of the people present, but a lot of other people who are on this call right now. Yeah.
So many tweets of like, where's Jeff? Which I was just like, please stop asking me, where's Jeff? The reason that they're asking, where's Jeff, is because Jeff wasn't there. Because, Jeff, you've been busy doing another show, right?
I launched a new show that has been a ton of work, but oh my God, I'm loving it. Thank you for bringing it up. I'm so glad to tell this audience, especially people like geeks like us that are into Game of Thrones type stuff, fantasy stuff. I'm so happy to be working on this because it's creative. It's as much as creative as these shows are, review shows, you know, this show, DLC, the review shows that I do, they feel so reactionary and talking about other people's creative work. I'm actually making something now. I'm doing a show called Dungeon Run, which is a live play Dungeons and Dragons show. So if you don't know about these things, they're this this very overpopular genre at this point. Everybody and their goat is doing one of these shows. So I, as someone's goat, am also doing one. But I think they're great. I really enjoy watching them. I've loved Dungeons & Dragons for a long, long time. It's the reason we did the Totally Rad Show in the first place is because Dan and Alex and I met playing Dungeons & Dragons. Anyway, so what you do with these shows is you play Dungeons & Dragons live with a group of people and record it. And what Dungeons & Dragons really is cooperative, improvised storytelling. Mm-hmm. It is a means of moving through a story where everybody sort of doesn't know what's going to happen. I mean, the dungeon master, I'm actually the dungeon master in this project. The dungeon master leads the group through the story. They're the They're in charge of the rules. They're the sort of referee of the rules of Dungeons and Dragons. They play all the bad guys and all the non-player characters that the players run into. So they set the stage. They write the story. They tell the story. But the players have agency. They can do what they want. They can make decisions. They role play their characters out.
They can do whatever they want, too, yes. is the thing. I think that's the fun part. I started playing tabletop games or role-playing games in college, and that freedom is just astounding. So I will say, like, for anybody who's rolling their eyes at the idea of Dungeons & Dragons, if you like good storytelling and if you like the sort of fantasy stuff we're seeing from Game of Thrones, you should probably give this a shot because it's so fun hearing free-willing storytelling.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate you saying that. Yeah, it's been such a blast. We have an incredible group of players that I've already brought to the table, vivid, interesting, fun, lovable characters. And I'm dungeon mastering. So I invented this whole story, this world. It's all homebrewed world. It's based on Dungeons and Dragons lore, but it is completely my invention. Created a map and a backstory and world history and all these different factions and things. And these players are experiencing it. And we're three episodes in now for Dungeon Run, and things are getting really crazy. The production is wild too. There's a fully animatronic Mind Flayer puppet that introduces every episode and talks to the audience. The show is interactive, so if you're watching live on the live stream, you can actually influence what happens. There's a means of communicating with the players, this means of actually giving them things. It's really cool, and we're trying to do some new stuff with what I said is a very popular genre already. We're trying to, you know, do something a little bit different. There's these incredible models. We have a Hollywood model maker making these wild models. So I hope if you're listening to this show and you like me even a little bit, you'll give it a shot because I'm really proud of it and I want to keep doing it for a long, long time. It's called Dungeon Run. It's available as an audio podcast. If you like listening to these things as an audio podcast, it's kind of like listening to an audiobook a little bit because it's long form storytelling. But it's also available on YouTube. You can search for The Dungeon Run on YouTube, three episodes so far. And live every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. Pacific time, we're on Caffeine TV. So it's caffeine.tv/thedungeonrun. That's where you get the best experience because you can actually interact in the live chat. There's already a huge community and people are really enjoying that experience of being in the live chat and influencing the game in real time. So I hope you give it a shot and let me know what you think because, like I said, I'm really, really proud of this. I haven't worked this hard on something in quite a long time, and I've really put my heart into it. And I think
you're basically phoning it into the Slash Filmcast these days, you know. So
for years, decades,
even. So I'm glad to see where all the work is going towards.
Yeah, finally something I care about. but no, truly, it is. You know, it's really a lot of work. It's a labor of love, and it's something really creatively fulfilling in a way that some of these other things haven't been. I love doing the Slash Filmcast. I love doing DLC, but it's such a different muscle that I'm getting to use again. Mm-hmm. And it's really fun.
It's very obvious that it's like a very different set of skills that this requires. And you broadcast for like hours, right? Isn't it like three?
Yeah, it's about
three and a half.
3.5 to 4 hours every session. So, like I said, it's long form. That's why a lot of people like listening to the audio version because you can listen to it in the car. But you really get a chance to kind of fall in love with these characters and be with them for a long, long time. And you know, we're doing some really fun, cool stuff. I hope people give it a shot. Yeah. You know,
I will have to say that's actually pretty compact for session times there, Jeff. Like typically it's like 6 to 8 hours. You could lose a day in something like this if you're really into it. So this sounds like a blast.
Yeah, when I usually play out with my friends in, you know, in my living room, it's 8 to 10 hours. But yeah, it's really cool. And we've gotten, honestly, guys, I've never, I know this sounds like I'm tooting my own horn, and maybe I am a little bit, but I've never gotten such positive feedback for anything so immediately in my life.
It is toot away.
Positive YouTube comments almost entirely. It's wild to see people embrace it so strongly. So I hope people listening will give it a shot.
Well, that's cool. Congratulations. It's called The Dungeon Run. It's on caffeine.tv/thedungeonrun. On Wednesday evening, 6 p.m. Pacific time. You can also find archived versions on YouTube. Congrats, Jeff. I hope it continues to grow and do what you want it to do. And I'm glad you're being creatively fulfilled somewhere if it's not the Slash Filmcast.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Well, anyway, let's get to today's show. Let's talk about what we've been watching this week. So I've been watching a bunch of stuff on Netflix. I had a chance to watch Knock Down the House.
My mom cleaned houses growing up. I never really saw myself going into politics.
Americans aren't asking for a lot. They're just asking for politicians to help them get by.
I can do this.
I know you can. Left wings, I was a broken thing.
Had a voice, but I could not sing. We're doing something very controversial. People say, how dare you mount a challenge to someone who's so established. So lost a line,
have been crossed, had a voice. It's not just our family. It's 30,000 families a year losing loved ones because they don't have insurance.
I was not trying to become an activist. We live 6 minutes from Ferguson. Being a woman of color, our image is scrutinized. People in my district, this is how we look.
I come from a long line of coal miners.
We've been collateral damage.
Have you guys heard of this documentary? Knock Down the House?
Much looking forward to watching it myself.
Yeah, so this movie, Knock Down the House, let me get you a little plot summary here. Knock Down the House chronicles a young bartender in the Bronx, a coal miner's daughter in West Virginia, a grieving mother in Nevada, and a registered nurse in Missouri build a movement of insurgent candidates to challenge powerful incumbents in Congress. One of their races will become the most shocking political upsets in recent American history. I will give you a guess as to whose that is. But this movie was directed by Rachel Lears. And I would say the biggest claim to fame this movie has is that one of the candidates that it documents is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, right? Like, it is in on the ground floor of her campaign.
So lucky.
And not knowing
she would become a global phenomenon.
Yes. Yeah. It is incredible. And so there's a few things about this I want to point out, right? First of all, I think this movie is very, very good. I think you should watch it, especially if you're an American, because I think it illustrates a lot of things about our current political system. It illustrates in many ways how broken the political system is and how difficult it is for outsiders, for people who represent the people, for candidates who represent the people, to actually get a foothold in and actually quote unquote knock down the house and actually unseat incumbent candidates. People don't like the politicians that represent them, but they are unable to vote them out because of the ways that the current political structure is shaped. And this movie does a great job of illustrating that. So that's like one – for that reason alone, I think it's worth seeing the movie. But as I also mentioned, it's in on the ground floor of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's campaign. And you see some of her early campaign meetings, right? Like where she's doing a campaign stop where like she's like going door to door and knocking on people's doors and being like, hey, can I talk to you about my candidacy? And like people being like, no, I'm busy. Which, like, by the way, like if you're watching the movie, you're one of the people that turned her down. You're probably not happy with yourself. You know, like you see her in a living room trying to convince like five people to vote for her, right, to support her candidacy. And because like that's the only people that she could get to show up at that point. And there's one moment in the movie that was so incredible to me where she talks about how she was able to get her name on the ballot. Right? That was a big, huge moment for her because a lot of people didn't think she would ever even get to that point. And she says what the date is. And it's like April of 2018. And I was just like, oh, it just struck me how quickly things have moved in that time. Right? Like she's gone from somebody who barely could get on the ballot, let alone someone who would win, to an international star, as you guys like, or like certainly a national star, a social media phenomenon. And like, you know, the creator and founder of her own cottage industry of people supporting her and attacking her on Fox News.
Yeah, no matter what side of the aisle you associate with, you have to recognize that she is a phenomenon. Yeah. I mean, people either love her or love to hate her, and there's passion on both sides of that. That's kind of unequaled on the left. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But it is it's an incredible story, and all the candidates are incredible. And I'm not going to like. You know, spoil it. Like, I'm not going to spoil anything in real life other than her. Like, she, AOC is inescapable. So, like, if you've probably heard about AOC, you know that she's in Congress. Like, that's, I don't think that's a spoiler. The other ones, like, you may not have heard the outcome of those. So, I won't say what the outcomes of those were. But, like, I think that this movie is worth watching because it ultimately presents a hopeful portrait of American politics in a time when a lot of things are hopeless. And I think that that is a message that everyone could internalize these days. And the documentary is really well shot, well cut together, and has lots of great and inspiring footage from these various campaigns. And it really just shows you, like, these people who start with nothing. Like, they have, like, no support, no name recognition, and they try to take down the establishment. And that's inspiring to see, no matter what the outcome is. So
yeah,
that's Knock Down the House. It's on Netflix right now. I think it premiered at South by Southwest, but it's on Netflix right now, and it's worth watching. So that's what I've been watching. I also had a chance to see this sketch comedy show called I Think You Should Leave. Have you guys heard of this?
Yeah, I've watched a bunch of it. Yeah,
the best thing. The best thing ever. Yeah.
So I found it very hit and miss, but the hits are very good.
They're very good. So this is like a sketch comedy show. Every episode's like 15, 20 minutes. There's only like, what, 6 to 8 episodes or something like that. It's very short. It's the brainchild of actor Tim Robinson. And I would say the pitch for the show is it takes like awkward social situations and takes them to their like logical, like their the most extreme version of an awkward social situation, which is like catnip for Dave, as my wife would say.
But not like Curb Your Enthusiasm, right? Like, I think it goes even more extreme.
Like, over the top to the point where it's not realistic, right?
Oh, yeah. It's like science fiction. It's amazing.
Yeah, science fiction. Yeah, exactly. And sketch, I think it's absolutely hilarious. As my wife would put it, it is like catnip for Dave Chen. Like,
I don't know. I don't think all of the sketches are equally home runs, but there are home runs.
Yeah, there are home runs.
Yeah,
I agree with you. Like, some of them are like, oof, like, that's pretty rough. I think one that I'm particularly a fan of is there is one that's a parody of musical biopics, which people who don't know, like, I kind of hate musical biopics. Like, I try to avoid reviewing them on this podcast. I think they're extremely formulaic. And there's always the scene in musical biopics.
Well, you'll put them on your summer movie wager list, won't you?
Dude, so it was revealed this week that Rocket Man is rated R, and I was like, my summer movie wager list is already going down in flames. It's already I have never felt less confident about my ability to win the summer movie wager than this year. So I have a feeling one of you guys is going to take it. And I will hate you for it. So, but going back to so I Think You Should Leave. There is a sketch where it takes place in like a musical recording booth, and it's like, hey, like, we don't like that song. Like, why don't you play us a different song? And he's like, okay, guys, follow my lead. And it kind of plays out like what would actually happen if somebody said follow my lead and you had no idea what they were doing. I thought that was just absolutely amazing. So,
like the scene, you know, the famous scene in. The movie that was just came out with Lady Gaga,
Star Is Born, right?
Star Is Born, yeah, where she like literally just walks out on stage and manages to be perfectly a duet, you know?
It's a realistic version of that, basically.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Yeah.
I will say, watch the first episode of the show because I think it is the most like perfectly honed episode and bunch of sketches. I've watched that damn baby sketch so many times. It's amazing. Like, yeah, the thing is, the show is so short, right? Short episodes and not that many episodes. It really, really rewards repeat viewing. Yeah, and I kind of dig that about it.
Doesn't overstay its welcome. There's already a bunch of memes that have come up as a result of the show. So I'd highly recommend it. It's I Think You Should Leave. It's on Netflix. Sounds like you all had a great time with it as well. So,
yeah.
Jeff Cannata, you've been watching a show on Netflix as well, right?
I have the new Christina Applegate show, Dead to Me, which, not to be confused with Dead Like Me.
Also good.
Dead, yeah. Also good. It's a title that could be easily confused, is what I'm saying. But well worth watching. My wife and I have been addicted to this show. It is really an interesting little beast. It is a half hour show that plays like an hour drama. It is, you know, you see half hour shows on Netflix, they tend to be comedies. This is not a comedy. This plays like an hour long drama, like you might find a Breaking Bad or, you know.
There are funny bits, though. I think it is funny, but it's not a comedy because it's all about grief, right?
Right. It is very much about grief and very much, I think, handles grief in a really honest way. And that's to its credit. But it's also a thriller and one of those, you know, one of those shows where you're sort of rooting for someone to get away with something.
Yeah. It's like Gone Girl level thriller twists at times, too. Like it is wild.
Yeah,
it is wild. It reminds me of Bloodline. Which it shares an actress with, actually, but very good show. But it's really interesting to see them pull off that format in a half an hour size, which you just don't. I just don't know of any other show that does that.
There's no fat to the show. Like it is all just like killer, great scenes, all great character work. Shout out to Linda Cardellini, who's also in Bloodline, but I think is tremendous here.
She's great.
And James Marsden. Just being, I love silly James Marsden. Like this guy gets saddled with, I don't know what's up with his agent. He's in the Sonic movie. I just feel bad for James Marsden so often. I don't feel bad for him this show, finally.
I think Christina Applegate straight up should get an Emmy nomination for this. Uh-huh. She is amazing. I've always liked her. I think that she's finally gets something juicy to really show how good she is. She's real good. Real good in this show. Honest, raw. She has to go through some really intense stuff, and I think it's Emmy worthy, straight up.
It's really also the combination of her and Linda Cardellini, who I think is just amazing.
They have everything. Great chemistry. I think. Yeah.
They do have great chemistry, and you buy their relationship right away. The relationship, literally in episode one, goes from 0 to 60, and you buy it. You get that they've like fast friends and really close, and. And as the things layer on of the mysteries unraveling, there's a lot to swallow, and somehow just the strength of their performance, their chemistry, their charisma. I was along for that ride because I think in lesser hands, it would be like, come on a little, but no, I loved the show. And it's one of those shows where you sort of cringe watching it because you know that it just has this foreboding sense of doom coming, like Breaking Bad and other shows like that, like Bloodline, like a lot of the shows. But man, it is addictive watching, and you can just blow through the 10 episodes real quick. Really good show.
Yeah, I actually watched this entire series in the time since we last talked.
In the time you've been talking, Jeff, I've watched the entire series.
I mean, it's a show, I'll be honest, like I kind of left it on the background sometimes. Like I wasn't paying super close attention for the entire thing, but it is like the perfect show for that, in my opinion. I mean, I'm not trying to disrespect it at all. I think that like what I'm trying to say is like it's a great show to binge, right? It is a great show to just like,
that's what you said, but okay.
Yeah.
I think like background viewing shows, that's another level of thing for me. That's like a CW show, maybe. I feel like if I miss a scene in the show, that's like a big twist or something.
I feel like binging by definition is like real rapt attention.
All right. Well, we should figure out how to define that correctly then.
Yeah.
Or at least consistently. But
lazy binge. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a nice lazy binge. That's how I'd put it.
Lazy binge.
Yeah.
Lazy binge.
Anyway. So I watched the whole thing. I quite enjoyed it, and I'd recommend it. Like it really caught me by surprise.
My favorite 1930s Catskills comic, Lazy Binge.
Nice.
You really had the one-liners.
I thought that the show would be too, like, you know, pretty early on, there's some pretty, like in the first episode, there's some pretty out there plot twists. And I was like, this show is so ridiculous. But then at some point, I like just embraced the ridiculousness. You know, I was just like, you know what? I'm just gonna go with it.
And, it's a little campy. I feel like it is out of Dave's comfort zone most of the time. So yeah. I'm happy to see that you've absorbed it. Like you're onto it.
I was like, maybe the reason I did the lazy binge was because of that. Is because I'm like, I can't fully embrace the show, but I am going to enjoy
just
it.
Just side eye. Just gonna side eye this.
It's just
show,
in my peripherals. Really. I'm gonna watch it in my peripheral vision. Is really how I prefer.
I agree with you about the, like I was kind of mentioning the hard to swallowness, and I really do think it's the strength of the performances that make it go down.
Yeah, you know? They're very good. They're very good. So both, and I was reading interviews with the creator of the show, and they're saying like that Linda Cardellini and like Christina Applegate are what are called offer only actresses, meaning like you can't ask them to come in and read or audition. You need to like go out to them with an offer for the show.
Hell yeah,
And so when they cast them. They didn't like get them in a room to be like, hey, like read the scene. Let's see what the chemistry is like. They had to just like take it on faith that they would be able to make it work. And I think they really do make it work as a friendship on screen. So, yeah, big shout out to the two main leads of.
You know who else is in this show? Who? Ed freaking Asner.
Yeah. Indeed. Did you have
silence.
A follow up for that, or was that
silence?
It? Yeah,
I'm just saying.
He does not need a follow up. He's just
I just dropped the Ed Asner on you guys.
Oh wow, yeah,
you got cool. Asnered right now.
Yeah. Oh man.
All right, so that's Dead to Me, and it's available on Netflix right now. So yeah, Devinder Hardwar, what have you been watching this week?
Oh, I just want to throw a quick shout out to the Criterion Channel, which launched a couple of weeks ago. This is the streaming service. It's $11 a month or $100 a year. It has a select assortment of Criterion films and extra features and interviews and stuff on a rotation. So it's not the entire Criterion library, but I actually kind of like this system because it avoids the glut of like Netflix of thinking there is like, oh man, you're just, you know, overwhelmed with the choices. And it also does a great job of curating the experiences. So they tend to do these like double features. Like if you like Mulholland Drive, you may like Persona, things like that. And I think that's a really smart way to like key people onto new things that they may not have thought of watching before. They also do these things. I believe Filmstruck did this too, where like you know, celebrities and directors will talk about their top five Criterion films and what they like about it. And honestly, I find that stuff so much more compelling than like just sitting and watching a trailer or reading user reviews or something. Like it is such a great curated experience. I ended up watching, what was it? The Long Good Night, or no, The Long Good Friday. This is the John McKenzie film from 1980, starring a wonderful Bob Hoskins and also Helen Mirren, and a really young Helen Mirren too. This is like, yeah, it's a gangster film. He's a gangster who's trying to like go straight, have a good deal. Except that deal does not go so well and things get pretty hairy. This is a tremendous crime movie. I've been meaning to watch it for a while. So it's nice to just have that available at the tap of a button. Also an amazing score too. Just Google the Long Good Friday theme. And it kind of blows me away. I kind of wish we had bombastic scores like this. It's kind of like 70s disco with some synth in there too from the 80s. Like it's wild. And Tokyo Drifter is a classic Seijin Suzuki film about a gangster who basically has to go rogue when his own gang turns against him. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. It's hugely influential. It's influenced Tarantino, of course, and a lot of other modern directors. And they make a good pairing because they're both about gangsters trying to kind of, go straight or at least try to find, better meaning in their lives or something. I just really enjoyed being able to stream them. I just rewatched Mulholland Drive. I can't wait. Like, I honestly really like going back and revisiting these films, maybe because I feel a little superheroed out of all the Marvel stuff. Like, I'm trying to fill in some gaps in my cinematic knowledge here, and this makes it super easy. So I think the service is pretty great. You could just check it out for yourself.
So the films you identified are Long Good Friday and Tokyo Drifter. So some thoughts on the Criterion Channel. First of all, I have not really used it that much. And I think the reason is just because, like, yeah, I have – oh, guys, you guys know what I completely forgot to mention that I watched this week. You know, I was actually looking forward to discussing
this. This is why you can't
watch. Yeah, this is why. It's going to be – you guys are going to hate me so much for this.
Tell us cinematic masterpiece you're going to drop in this right now.
Okay. The cinematic masterpiece is the 2018 version of Robin Hood.
Why? I saw you live tweeting.
Why?
That.
Directed by Otto Bathurst.
I saw you live tweeting, guys.
When this movie came out, this looked like one of the dumbest movies ever. Uh-huh. And of course, it bombed at the box office. So this is
and
the,
you were like, sign me up, buddy.
The plot summary is this reboot of Robin Hood is a war-hardened crusader and his Moorish commander mount an audacious revolt against the corrupt English crown in a thrilling action adventure packed with gritty battlefield exploits, mind-blowing fight choreography, and a timeless romance. That's the
mind-blowing.
That's the description of Robin Hood.
By the way, Dave, you're proving my point here. Modern movies, not that great sometimes. Go back and watch the old stuff.
Yeah, there's not so my Robin Hood. It's not my Robin Hood. My Robin Hood's Kevin Costner. Maybe an animated fox.
So, guys, this movie, Robin Hood, is amazing. By the way, I got it. So I rented this. There's a Amazon Prime member deal, I think. You could get it for like $3, I think, is rent it for $3.
I feel like nice what's price. Happening right now is a preview of if you win the wager this year.
That's correct.
No, sir.
Full disclosure, I work for Amazon. But so Robin Hood, think of it like if Ridley Scott's Black Hawk Down, but with bows and arrows.
He also made a Robin Hood. Didn't he? Or no, he made a. Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he made the Kevin. He made the Russell Crowe.
Yeah, yeah, but the Russell Crowe Robin Hood did not take place in the Black Hawk Down universe. Think of the Italian Job, but with bows and arrows. Think of the Dark Knight chase scene, but with bows and arrows and wagons. I mean, you mix all of that together into an unwieldy stew, and you get Otto Bratwurst or Otto Bathurst's 2018 Robin Hood. Sorry.
Anyway, the Criterion Channel, a service which we will never find this Robin Hood movie on, highly recommended.
So I'll just say a couple more words, and then I want to talk about Criterion Channel. But like this movie bombed. It was reviewed very terribly. But if any of what I said sounds interesting to you, if the idea of like people wielding bows and arrows like their M4 weapons,
impetus to watch this movie, Dave. I'm really trying to figure out the thought process.
If you wanted to see an action scene like The Matrix's lobby shootout, but with bows and arrows,
CG bows and arrows, yeah,
CG bows and arrows.
Hashtag but with bows and arrows.
Hashtag both of us. If you liked, Legolas in The Lord of the Rings shooting like three orcs in like 3 seconds with bows and arrows, but you want to see that multiplied by 100, then you should watch the 2018 Otto Bathurst version of Robin Hood.
I don't know if I could trust any of your recommendations after this, Dave. Yeah.
If you want to see the Transformers Fallen King, but with bows and arrows.
Yes. That is a great example. I mean, here's the thing. This is truly, in my opinion, this is a movie that is so bad it's good. It is so ridiculous and over the top that you cannot take it seriously. You have to just like have fun with this and understand that, like, hey, some of the bow and arrow action is pretty hilarious enjoyable. So I'm going to just say I had a good time watching Robin Hood.
For shame. We need a shame bell for this podcast.
Now, back to the Criterion Channel. So the thing with the Criterion Channel that
this is interesting as this Robin Hood movie.
Yeah.
I just don't get it.
Here's the thing with the Criterion Channel is they've taken a very interesting approach. And I just want to put this PSA out there. If you subscribe to the Criterion Channel, how much is it per month, by the way?
It is, let me pull that back up. I believe it's $11 a month or $100
per
annually.
Year, right. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you like film, like, and if you want to support like what they're doing, I think that is worth it. That's a good deal.
I agree. But the thing with the Criterion Channel that people should just be aware of is it does not have every Criterion disc release. And I think like a lot of people will be disappointed. They'll think, oh, it's Criterion Channel. Of course, it's going to have the Criterion Collection on there. It does not have everything in the Criterion Collection on there. Like extremely basic things from the Criterion Collection, it does not have on there. So like what it does is rather than try to offer you everything or a vast selection, it is a highly curated experience. Right? It's not trying to throw everything in the kitchen sink at you. It's like
I think that's better.
Here is like rather than like try to offer you like 50,000 movies, here is like 9 movies that we think are really good, right? That's kind of what they do like on a weekly basis.
It's definitely
basis.
More than 9. It is.
I'm not saying the whole service is 9. I'm just saying like on a weekly basis, they do these like curated things and like they do these curated programs. And so they try to basically like add a level of personalization and curation to it.
I think that sounds really useful.
I did.
I'm not saying it's bad at all. I really support what they're doing. I'm just saying like don't go into it expecting it's going to be super comprehensive. It is going to be.
You're not
going
to find any of the films of Otto Bratwurst on it.
Yeah, Bathurst. Sorry about that, Jeff. That's correct. You won't. But there's a lot of like classic Criterion discs that I would expect to find on here that are not on here. You know. And that is kind of a bummer. But you will get a really curated experience. You will get something that is like, that will have a lot of care and thought put into it. And if you want someone to guide you through the history of film, then it's a great choice. So, but just wanted to throw that caveat out there. So, All right. Well, that's what we've been watching this week. Definitely go see Robin Hood, if you can. And that's what it's going to do it for all what we've been watching. Let's talk about donors for the podcast this week. This week we had one lone donor, Michael Crowder. Thank you so much for donating to the Slash Filmcast this week. We really appreciate all the money people can donate to help us defray the cost of doing the show, of seeing movies, and putting on the podcast for you. If you want to support us, you can go to paypal.me/filmcast. That's paypal.me/filmcast.
We need some friends for Crowder. Crowder can't be the lone donor. We need more Crowders out there.
Yeah. You know what they say? One's a Crowder, three's a crowd. You know what I mean? Jeff, come on.
I know that's what they say.
Wow, Jeff, you just really just left me twisting in the wind there.
Sorry. I thought you were at least going to make it a triple. One's a Crowder, two's
I forgot the rule of threes, really, is what it, yeah. So thanks to Michael Crowder for donating. Again, paypal.me/filmcast. That's paypal.me/filmcast. Never donate to us if it in any way causes you any hardship in your life. But if you do want to support us, we really would appreciate it. So again, paypal.me/filmcast. You can also go to slashfilm.com, use the /filmcast tab and the PayPal links on the side of the page. Let's get into our review of Detective Pikachu.
So there I was. I woke up with a heavy case of amnesia in the middle of nowhere. The only clue to my past is Harry's name and address inside this hat. So I made my way to the apartment, and that's when I found you and your stapler gun.
Stop talking! You're a hallucination!
You're a hallucination.
So you're a talking Pikachu with no memories who's addicted to caffeine.
I can stop whenever I want. These are just choices. Another round, extra shot, black as night. Thank you, sweetie. I don't know. Maybe Harry got in too deep. Mixed up the wrong crowd, that kind of thing. Look, you can talk to humans. I can talk to Pokemon. And if you want to find your pops, we're going to need each other.
No, I don't need a Pokemon.
What about a world-class detective?
That was from the trailer for Detective Pikachu. I'm going to read the plot summary here. Ace Detective Harry Goodman goes mysteriously missing, prompting his 21-year-old son Tim to find out what happened. Aiding in the investigation is Harry's former Pokemon partner, wisecracking, adorable super sleuth, Detective Pikachu. This movie was directed by Rob Letterman. And, you know, I got to ask this question. Like, what is our familiarity on the podcast here with Pikachu? Not Pikachu, I should say Pokemon, right? Devendra, like, how familiar are you with Pokemon?
I mean, I grew up with it. Yeah, I really enjoyed it on the Game Boy. I'm not like a super fanatic, but I've definitely played the games. I watched the cartoon.
Do you do the AR game? Do you play the modern AR game where you like?
Yeah, it's fun. Pokemon Go. I've played some of the follow up titles as well. I'm not hardcore, but I certainly know the mythology. I really appreciate the world, and I love Pikachu. Actually, the original Pokemon movie that was released in theaters here in the U.S., I remember taking my little brother to that and hearing an entire theater of children cry. So that was fun.
Huh. All right. Jeff, what's your familiarity with Pokemon?
Well, you know, I review video games for a living, Dave. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Never heard of it.
I do that. However... This has just never been one of my franchises. And
have you played this?
I really haven't. I think I was a little old when it really happened, when Pokemon happened. In earnest. And
it's RPG for kids, which I think was part of the appeal to school.
Yeah, I think I'm a little older than you guys, and I think I was just a little beyond that curve. And so it never had any of the nostalgia value for me. And I've always felt on the outside looking in of that particular franchise. I've tried a couple of times to get into the games, and I just can't.
I have virtually zero familiarity with Pokemon whatsoever.
I'm shocked by this development right here.
I don't think I've ever seen a Pokemon cartoon. Like I've seen, you know,
Dave, what did you do when you were younger?
Obviously I had a misspent youth not doing Pokemon.
But Pokemon cartoons, the games were great. Yeah.
Haven't played a single Pokemon game. Haven't done the AR game. Haven't watched a single cartoon. Have zero familiarity. The only thing I knew is the character of Pikachu. That's literally the only thing. I didn't understand the concept. Like, gotta catch them all. I didn't know what that meant before.
So
I walked
you
were
the target audience for this movie, right here.
Yep, pretty much. I mean, I had no idea anything about Pokemon. So that is kind of our perspective. On the one side, you got Devendra, who is really kind of into the world, or at least like has like deep knowledge of it. You got Jeff Kanata, who's like somewhat passing knowledge from his video game reviewing, and you got me, Dave Chen, zero knowledge whatsoever of Detective Pikachu. So or Pokemon
description in general.
Yeah, it's a good rule of thumb in general for how our knowledge of things on the podcast. So let's start with Devendra. I mean, as a Pokemon fan or a supporter, what did you think of Detective Pikachu? Is this the first good video game movie?
Well, I will say Mortal Kombat was there when we were younger. I think that first movie still holds up. It is a bad 90s action movie, but I think there's a certain appeal to it. And what really made that movie work is that it didn't shy away from the video gaminess of it. Like, it really embraced that world. And I think this movie does that as well. And
before you go on too far, I just want to give a shout out also to Mortal Kombat, because still one of my all-time favorite midnight viewing experiences on opening weekend in a crowd when the movie starts and it goes Mortal Kombat and that techno music came in. We all went bonkers in that theater, man.
I spent years of my life doing karate to the Mortal Kombat soundtrack, so that's how I grew up. That is not a good movie, but it's certainly I think a fun one. And also the first Resident Evil I think is a ton of fun too, same director. But this Detective Pikachu, I think, is a legitimately good movie. I think it's very good. It's sort of like a kid's introduction to noir as well. Like the whole idea of basically, there's a genuine mystery here. It's a kid who kind of stumbles upon it and has to pretend to be a detective. It does a good job of really introducing you to the world, too. Like, I think the world building in this movie is fantastic. They just spend so much attention to the way the key city works here. I forget the name of the city.
Rhyme City.
Rhyme City, right? The introduction to Rhyme City, there's like a, a Total Recall-esque video explanation of like what that city is? And how it's all put together. You learn the rules of the world. You get a decent sense of like the Pokemon world too from an opening scene. This movie definitely expects you to have some passing Pokemon knowledge. Like, it does things and doesn't explain everything. And I think there's something something ballsy about that. Like, the audience that this film is directed to is Pokemon fans and probably kids. They know how the Pokeballs work. They know what a mime is. They know how Ditto works. Like, you don't really have to go into the whole, you know, breakdown of how all these things work out. I think in broader strokes, this movie does a great job of giving us a world where humans and Pokemon coexist. The Pokemon also look amazing. I think the art direction and the production design of this movie is fantastic. The look of this movie is tremendous too. Like, it feels kind of film noirish as well. Like, I was surprised by all the technical things I really enjoyed. Story-wise, like, it's not perfect. I think it's very much a kid's mystery movie. But there's a lot of stuff here that I really enjoyed. I love the character moments. I love Ryan Reynolds as Detective Pikachu. The Pokemon moments, I think, work definitely for fans. Like, there's some deep cut things here that are hilarious. I do wonder if they kind of leave, you know, audiences like you, Dave, who have no clue about this world, like if you understood anything that's happening. But like the whole extended mime sequence, there's a big chunk of the movie dedicated to Ditto. It's a deep cut in a way that feels really, it's fan servicey, but also works, I think, in the service of this narrative. So yeah, I really enjoyed this movie overall. I think it does, you know, it's respectful of the franchise. I think it's something fans will enjoy. And I think it's good enough that even kids or adults who don't really know the series can enjoy it as well.
Well, Jeff Kanata, what did you think of Detective Pikachu?
Well, Dave, I guess you could say my thoughts about Detective Pikachu are best summed up in the form of a limerick.
An all Pika limerick. Come on.
Well, kind of. And it's funny that you framed it this way, the question, Dave, because my limerick directly addresses this very issue. Here we go.
Nice.
I've never been a Pokemon dude, but I thought when this movie was viewed, I'd understand more of the Pokemon lore. Instead, I just felt Pikachu'd. Of course, Pikachu has a verb there, meaning it sounded just like Pika, Pika, Pikachu, Pika, Pika all the time. It just felt nonsensical and it didn't make any sense to me.
Pikachu
at all.
Is always a good thing, Jeff. Like
yeah,
that.
I was going to say, like, is Pikachu a pejorative there? I didn't understand.
It's always good.
Yeah. So.
So this movie gave me the experience that I have no doubt many, many, many people have of things I love, you know? There are many deep, weird nerddoms that I am very passionate about that I will be so – I mean, Marvel Comics is just one of several that I will go on at length to my friends, to people on this show, you know, talking about how great it is that all this cool lore and this deep stuff and all the stuff that I saw in the corners of the frame and, oh, my God, it's so cool that they included that. Oh, my God. It's like serving my nostalgia from when I was a kid. It's amazing. It feels awesome. There are, I'm sure, many, many people who hear that and go, hey, way over my head. I did not get any of that. I'm so happy for you that you did, but not for me. That finally, I've had that experience now in my own, in a movie where I'm on the other side, right? So I sense that this movie really has a lot of fan service and it rightfully so. It should be about that, right?
But it's also pretty tastefully done. I will say this is not like just a, like, oh, look at that Pokemon. Like this movie restrains itself a lot, surprisingly.
Yeah. Well, I disagree with,
I agree with Devendra that like, it felt to me like, okay, there's like vast shots of like where there's like tons of Pokemon and like, you know, and I'm sure as I was watching it, I was thinking to myself, if I was a Pokemon fan, I'm sure I would be freaking out right now because I'm going to be spotting all the different Pokemon. But as someone who has no idea, I was just like, kind of cool. But I did also find it to be tasteful. That being said, Jeff, continue.
I don't disagree that it's tasteful. I disagree that it's a good movie. I don't think it is. I think it looks great. I'll agree with Devendra on that point. I love the way they have visualized these ridiculous, 2D, essentially 2D cartoonish characters into a photorealistic look.
That's tough. Really,
it's not easy. You're right. Yeah. And it's
look
and
at
it's
the
really
Sonic
well
movie
done.
And like the insanity around that. That's one character they just had to do.
Yeah.
This movie visualizes hundreds.
Yes, and I think it's cool. I mean, the movie this evokes for me is Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yes,
right? It feels like that. It feels like a modern version of that. It's just not nearly as good a movie, in my opinion, as Who Framed Roger Rabbit. It just it really I think it really rests on its nostalgia and its fan service, and that's fine. That's cool.
Yeah.
That just won't land for me. And I think the movie really does female characters wrong, which is baffling to me that. A franchise that has such a huge female audience that women, young and old, love these games and play them, just as much, if not more, than males do. That they completely, there's no woman character in this that has any agency whatsoever. There's even a moment toward the end where the only female character in the entire movie goes, oh, "I'm just gonna go sit in the car while you guys do things." It's very strange to me. I thought some of the action stuff was fine. We'll get into spoilers, but there's baffling non-explanations for things that I don't even that I think they've taken liberties from the game. It's not like the explanation would be clear if you know the game, but just on a very basic level, the fundamental logic of this movie makes no sense to me, which we'll get into in spoilers. But yeah, I mean, I think there's fun to be had. I don't think it's a wasted effort in the sense that I think if you love Pokemon, you'll probably love seeing this version of it because it really feels like, oh my gosh, what if Pokemon were real? What it would be like? I think that is probably very fun for people who care about that. I'm just happen to not be one of them.
It also shies away from, I think, the darker aspects of what the Pokemon world is, because you're not just imprisoning these animals in tiny balls on your belt, and then you own them and you go fight them to the death or something. Like it avoids a lot of that, basically.
There's nothing in it. I mean, we'll get to spoilers. I will refrain from there, but I was really hoping that it would make me leave the theater and go, oh my gosh, I really want to play a Pokemon game for the first time.
Yeah.
But it did not have that effect, and it didn't have much to offer me as someone who didn't already love this IP. And I wonder if Dave felt similarly or if it worked for you.
I thought it was completely fine. You know, that's my reaction to this film is I agree with Devendra that the world building is really impressive. And we've seen examples of good world building and bad world building in the last few years. And in general, I thought they put in just enough. I think there are some people confused, you know, about what exactly the Pokemon's role is in these people's lives. Like, are they slaves or like are they like pets or are they slaves? Are they co-equal in this relationship? Like, that's pretty unclear in the movie, perhaps like intentionally so. But other than that, I thought the way they did the world building was really strong. You know, they have these like video explainers. They have like vague references that people make to it's basically like an alternate reality where Pokemon and man have grown up, you know, coexisting. Right.
We even get glimpses of like prehistoric man coexisting with Pokemon, which I thought was kind of fun.
Yeah. So I actually really like all that stuff. And the thing is, Pikachu is absolutely adorable. I mean, just like the way they've realized that character is super cute.
You look at it and you're like, that's a Pikachu.
Yeah.
It's not like a mutant Sonic or something, right? And it's the little things. It's like the texture of the fur. They got the nose to wiggle in a way that we don't see that really in the cartoons or even the games, but his nose wiggles like a rabbit or something, like a real animal. Like even when he's idling in the animation, like little things are happening. There's so much care taken to these characters.
Yeah. So I love the look of the film and the world building aspects of the movie. It feels like a real world. It doesn't feel like they just kind of randomly threw a bunch of stuff together and didn't think through the implications.
It's shot in London, and they also like basically turned London and like hybridized it with Tokyo a little.
So that was super cool.
Yeah.
All that stuff was cool. Love all that stuff. And then the story, I think, is just completely unremarkable. Justice Smith is a good actor, but like I didn't think that this movie made particularly good use of his skills. And then Ryan Reynolds is kind of a G-rated version of Deadpool as Detective Pikachu. And that just
should have been Danny DeVito.
Yeah, that would have been fun. That just didn't work for me. Like there was maybe a handful of chuckles in my entire theater during this entire film. And it just wasn't the kind of like laugh out. Like Deadpool, I remember dying laughing. I was just like, it was so hilarious. I love the wisecracking.
Got the references.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there weren't that many references in this movie, I didn't think, right?
No, there are a lot of references to Pokemon, too. So the people who are playing, like, it's things like there's a character, Psyduck, plays a surprisingly large part of the role in this movie. Psyduck, a character who is just literally just a duck that's a bundle of anxiety and explodes if he gets too stressed. And I love that, like, the movie comments on that. It's like, why are we even bringing you here? You're the worst. You're the worst person to have this description.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. I mean, I just thought the story was okay. Ryan Reynolds as Detective Pikachu is okay. Like, the protagonist is okay. Like,
there was Watanabe. He's in here a little, but he is.
I'm always gonna love seeing Ken Watanabe in any movie. Like, regardless of what the movie is, regardless even of how good his performance is.
Ken Watanabe next to a Pokemon bulldog and really playing it straight too. Like, it's
that stuff is good. That stuff is good. I agree. It's great. But yeah, I mean, other than that, I just thought the movie was okay. It did nothing for me. I saw this tweet that really summed it up for me. I think it was Eric Davis tweeted out like, it is the video game movie that has the highest Rotten Tomato score ever at 63%.
Yeah.
Which I was just like, that really sums it up, which is that yes, it is better than most video game movies, the vast majority of which are terrible. But it crosses that bar just barely, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So not a bad movie. I wouldn't like, and particularly if you're a fan of Pokemon, I'm guessing you will be delighted by this.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, not a bad movie, but not great. Not something that I feel like transcended the genre, that transcended even the genre of video game movies that much, to become something much more. And so those are my thoughts on Detective Pikachu. Yeah. And also like from a box office perspective, $58 million opening weekend, which is not looking super great for people who put it high up on the summer movie wager list, right? Like,
yeah, that's me.
Yeah, where did you put it, Jeff Cannata? Do you remember?
I don't. I can look, but pretty high. I think like
you put
six.
It at number seven, actually. So that's not seven. Bad. That's not bad.
I assume this thing will have legs. Like, this is the biggest franchise in the world. You know, like there's a lot like basically that could push this movie forward. I don't know how much of that's going to be just U.S. versus international sales. I will say it is really interesting that they chose to adapt this version, you know, this game, Detective Pikachu, and not like one of the original Pokemon games or not like a core game, because that's like that would just basically be retelling the story of the original anime, or maybe Red and Blue or Yellow or something. And it didn't do that. It kind of, I think it's fascinating that this movie basically just, it works because it assumes most of the audience knows what Pokemon are. They know how this world works. Like, none of this stuff is alien to them. They don't have to go explain every little bit about the world. Whereas, I don't know, I could see them trying to play it safer and trying to do that first movie to create this Pokemon cinematic universe and having it just be a dull, you know, retelling of Red and Blue. And I'm kind of glad we didn't get that. Like, this sets the stage for something more.
I agree. I think it was a bold choice and an interesting choice and a offbeat choice. You know, it's like starting with Into the Spider-Verse. You know
what
I mean?
Yeah.
I dig it. I just wish that it had more to offer me. But it's not for me. This movie isn't for me. And I totally respect that. I totally get that. There's a lot of movies I love that aren't for other people. And that's fine, too. You know?
Yeah. So, Davinder, the idea of like Pikachu being inhabited by some other voice that's really wisecracky and non-Pikachu-esque is foreign to the Pokemon universe, I assume, right?
Like, it is in that Detective Pikachu game. So it was new for that game, and they basically just adapted that game directly, it seems like.
Got it. Okay. All right. Well, shall we get to some spoilers, gentlemen?
Yeah.
Spoilers for Detective Pikachu starting right now.
Now you're looking for the secret.
You're going to see this coming.
No.
But you won't find it because, of course,
you're not going to see this coming.
You're not really looking.
I have been puzzling over how it works.
You don't really want to work it out.
Who's in the box?
I have been dying to tell you.
I want to tell you my secret now.
You want to be fooled.
You know, this is a movie I wish I was sitting right next to you guys as you watched it and just looked over as you were confused as hell. Like, what is a Mewtwo? What is a Ditto? Like, the entire plot revolves around these characters, some of which are basically magic, right?
Yeah, evidently Mewtwo is God.
Yeah, Mewtwo is omnipotent.
Mewtwo is the uber, he is the Super Saiyan of Pokemon, and he can do many things because he's this weird genetic experiment. It is kind of fascinating that the movie starts with a Mewtwo scene, like really just throwing you right into the middle of things.
Yeah,
I work with the biggest Pokemon fan any of us would ever know. She has more Pokemon knowledge than all of us will ever have put together. And I picked her brain about, I had a million questions. And the movie definitely takes some liberties with Pokemon lore. But I had a lot of questions about Mewtwo. One of my biggest problems with this movie is like, what's Mewtwo's deal?
Hey, man, everyone's trying to keep Mewtwo down. He's just trying to be free. He's the he's like a good Magneto.
Basically. So his whole thing was, I have the power right now.
Yeah.
To resurrect your dad. I have the power right now to make all this fine. I can do this anytime, but I'm going to wait until the son experiences something, I guess. I mean, there's some weird catch that Mewtwo has decided needs to happen in order for Mewtwo to return the father, pull the father out of the Pikachu. Mewtwo somehow sticks the father in the Pikachu. Where does the body go? Don't know. Don't explain it. Doesn't matter, I guess. Keeping it in the Pikachu without memories for some reason, waiting. They've met, they hang out, the father and the son met, but not good enough for Mewtwo. Mewtwo has to wait until something happens that's undefined. Listen,
the humans got to fix their own shit, all right? They imprison Mewtwo. He's this weird experiment. They don't really explain a lot of that stuff, like a lot of how that works.
I think that's bad screenwriting.
Well, I think the biggest leap in logic for me is, why doesn't the main character recognize his dad's voice in Pikachu?
That's true. That is very true. That's like the big one.
That part I sound familiar. Understand valid. At all. Yeah.
Valid question.
That was never explained, right? I don't think it was. So
no.
Yeah. Also, how are they going to do a sequel to this movie if it does well? Because the whole premise, the whole premise of Ryan Reynolds inhabiting Pikachu is now over.
Right.
So I don't know.
He dies again. There's another crazy crash.
That is one thing I really enjoyed about the movie is how you never see Ryan Reynolds' face until the end. Like,
yeah,
it's kind of like in Arrested Development, there was this running joke that you would never see a character's mouth when they swore. They'd always turn away from the camera or something would block their mouth like the instant they swore. It's kind of like that where like at every time you were supposed to see the person's face, they just turned around or the camera was just in the wrong place. And I did enjoy that quite a bit. So,
yeah,
a lot of things don't make sense.
Special. What's that?
I said a lot of things don't make sense.
A lot of things don't make sense. A lot of things don't make sense. And, there's nothing special about Pikachu. If you didn't know that Pikachu was the special one, there's nothing special about Pikachu. Pikachu does nothing. In the whole movie?
That Pikachu, like the ability to speak to another human, that is special. I think the movie does solidify that. Yeah.
But the Pikachu is supposed to have the ability to do some stuff and it doesn't ever do anything. You know?
Well, you mean like the electricity stuff. It does that at the end, right?
Right.
The ability to like shoot electric bolts and such.
Yeah.
Is what I got.
Please explain to me Pikachu's powers.
That is the full extent that it can shoot.
What is Pikachu to you?
It's like a doll of some kind that can shoot electricity out of its bum. That's kind of what I'm getting from it.
Bum?
Yeah, the tail, you know, the tail. Because its tail is shaped like a lightning bolt. Right?
It is shaped like a lightning bolt, but it's kind of like it comes through the power of the cheeks. It's kind of comes through the head.
I did not get that. Yeah. Speaking of random Pokemon, though, the thing that was really good about this movie was that section with the mime. I thought that was
mime is good because he's creepy as hell. Yeah. Nobody likes him. So yeah.
It's super
great.
Disturbing though. They straight up murder that mime.
They pull a freaking like Reservoir Dogs on the mime.
It's so disturbing when he pours fake gasoline on it. It's the implication is very dark. I mean, very dark.
It's a very smart edit too. Like the movie knows what it's doing. I think that's kind of fun.
Thinks it's being burned alive at the end.
Still writhing agony in that factory somewhere. Yeah. This movie has Pikachu say hell. Like this movie definitely does things I never expected. The Pokemon Company is notoriously very particular about how its characters are used. I know somebody who used to work for the Pokemon Company, like doing copywriting stuff, and there are a lot of things you can and cannot do with the Pokemon. So it also seems like they really they had clearly a hand in this movie, like, and guided, you know, the writers and the director in terms of like what they could and couldn't do. And maybe that's also another big difference between this and the damn Sonic movie, because every time I see a photo or like
judging it before it's out, they're changing stuff. Who knows? Could be good. Maybe it's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
Dave, we need to go down the rabbit hole, Cars style, of what the what the implications of some of the stuff introduced in this movie
is because
we according to this movie, explicitly said by this movie, is the fact that Rhyme City is the only place where Pokemon and humans live side by side, and everything is cool there. Like, they are very useful, productive members of society. They seem to have some intelligence. They are individuals that are respected. They help
this
firemen
put up. Starts with a Pokemon hunt. So right. That does but exist.
Everywhere else in the world, they are hunted for sport. There's one city that has proven that they are individuals that have consciousness and feelings and can help you put out fires and help you, you know, all kind can direct traffic. Evidently they trust them to direct traffic in the middle of the town square. But everywhere else in the world, literally everywhere else that isn't Rhyme City, these creatures are hunted for sport.
Pokemon trainers do exist in this world. They talk about that. Like, they said this kid was going to be a Pokemon trainer. So yeah.
Jeff, it's like this is Rhyme City is like the Burke of this universe. It's like Burke from How to Train Your Dragon, right? Everywhere else in the universe, dragons are hunted for sport, but Burke, they coexist peacefully with humans. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. So,
okay. it is sort of the same thing. I mean, they're not like hunted and killed, but they're captured and enslaved and forced to fight other monsters. So,
it would be like if Burke was known by everyone and there is media about Burke, and there's like Burke's founders are interviewed on TV and people are still like, yeah, but I really like hunting them and trapping them and keeping them in my pocket.
Basically, it's a world where dog fighting is not only
it's not only accepted, but
encouraged, right? Like
the exception to the rule is not dog fighting.
yes, that's correct.
The bigger question too, and this is not really answering the games. In the games, the only animals are Pokemon. So what do people eat? Think about that. Take that to the bank. Okay. I was surprised to see Chris Gere in this movie.
Chris Gere from You're the Worst, who plays the son of.
Oh yeah, he was great.
Yeah,
he basically plays his You're the Worst character, I haven't really seen him in much else aside from You're the Worst, so it is kind of funny to see him here.
I think the dog fighting metaphor is so excellent. I want to underscore it again and just say, literally, somebody founded a town where they're like, wait, we could just hang out with dogs and treat them well and everybody would be happy. And the rest of the world is like, no, we still love dog fighting too much. We're not going to be down with the cool domesticated dogs that are lovable and happy and help us in our everyday lives. No. We still want to hunt them for sports.
See, you wonder what the sequel's going to be about. There you go, Jeff.
It's disturbing.
It's disturbing. There's a lot of game criticism and analysis written about this over the past few decades. So, it's always been a thing about Pokemon that's fun to explore and talk about.
Yeah. I was looking at this article at IndieWire entitled Detective Pikachu Raises Troubling Questions No One Can Ever Hope to Answer. And they basically identify this exact same issue that we're talking about.
Yes.
Which is that what actually distinguishes the Charmanders and Squirtles of the world from chimpanzees and salamanders? Since each Pokemon is a distinct species, there has to be something that warrants defining them with a unique umbrella term that excludes the existing animal kingdom. And one reason this question matters is because without answering it, you can't possibly explain the fundamental difference between Pokemon battles and dog fights, end quote. So what differentiates Pokemon from animals?
In the games, animals, I believe, don't exist. They are
the animals of this world. They are the animals of this world, right?
Yes.
It is.
Yes.
So they cause these animals.
Like, sounds like we are the real Mon.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Nailed it, Jeff.
Thank you.
Nailed it, Jeff. I don't know how to respond to that, except maybe to wrap up the review. Any closing thoughts on Detective Pikachu?
I will say, as a parent, as somebody who's going to be watching lots of kids' movies with my daughter soon, I'm very glad that a decent one, a watchable one, exists, because I've sat through quite a few with my nieces and nephews, and there's a lot of crap out there. So, you know, there is that. I think your kids will really love this one, Jeff, when they get to see it.
What do we feel about, like, video game in the pantheon of video game movies?
Uh-huh.
How do we feel this stacks up? Like, what is your favorite video game movie? You know, obviously all of them have been reviewed terribly, but you guys had a lot of affection for Mortal Kombat. Is that your favorite video game movie? Like, do you have a favorite video game
movie? Favorite in terms of, like, a thing that has a place in my heart? Yes.
Yes.
Probably.
Yes. What is your favorite in terms of thing that has a place in your heart?
Yeah. It would be that.
It would be Mortal Kombat.
I always cheat and say my favorite video game movie is Hardcore Henry.
Yeah. I mean, there you go.
It's a cheat because it's not actually a video game
movie.
Okay, yeah.
But
it is a
putting
video
aside
game
movie. Your silly cheat, Jeff, what is your favorite video game movie? One directly based on a video game. It's got to be Assassin's Creed, right?
It's got to be Assassin's Creed. Oy vey. I really thought that was going to be the one. I put a lot of hope in that one. I thought it had the right creative team. I'm hoping our friend Dan Trachtenberg is the one to do it, to crack the nut. You know, he's working hard on, as far as I know, on the Uncharted movie.
I guess I
need to look at a list of all of them. I think Mortal Kombat.
There really aren't many, though. Like, there really aren't that many that you could consider to be good. Like, that's the thing.
Yeah, there aren't really very many.
I'm gonna name a few random ones. Okay.
Huh?
Alone in the Dark, all of Uwe Boll's, Wing Commander.
Oh, right. Doom as well. Yeah.
Hitman.
I mean, I thought
Hitman. God damn.
Warcraft was bad.
Max Payne.
You know what? I thought the Alicia Vikander Tomb Raider was good. I know you guys disagreed with me, but I liked it.
Rampage. That's another one. Tomb Raider, Alicia, you really like that Alicia Vikander Tomb Raider movie more than Detective Pikachu?
Oh, yes. Really? I mean, but I also like cared about that IP more. So
it's a more grown up movie than Detective Pikachu.
Jeff, if I had a cheat answer, the one I would give of like favorite video game movie is Live, Die, Repeat or Edge of Tomorrow, right? Like that's not based on a video game, but like it's very much structured like a video game. That's the one I would choose. If I had to choose an actual movie, you know what? I'm going to put this out there, guys. I'm going to put this out there. Street Fighter, the one directed by Steven E. D'Souza, because like Robin Hood, it is a movie that is so bad it's good. Also, if you read the oral history of Street Fighter, it's incredible. Like basically they had zero rehearsal to do those fight scenes, which really shows.
I like that movie mainly for Raul Julia.
Raul Julia's final role, right?
He gave his all as he was dying.
Yes.
He gave his all to that movie. Like, I have a lot of affection for that movie, too. Not as fun as Mortal Kombat, I think, just because it didn't stay true to the games, really. But Raul Julia, I love that man forever. He did that movie because his kids love the game.
Yeah.
And, like, that's,
you gotta admire that. On a related note, I will say that The Legend of Chun-Li gave us the best Chris Klein performance known to mankind. There's like super cuts of just Chris Klein's lines in Legend of Chun-Li, and you should watch them because they're incredible. So
I did watch that entire movie.
It's a thing.
And how was it?
I definitely remember Chris Klein.
You know what's wild about that movie? Say it was written by Justin Marks, a guy who's written some really good stuff, the Jungle Book remake, and also Counterpart, that series I really love from Stars. But man, yeah, somebody wrote Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li. Hard to imagine.
Yeah, that Justin Marks, that guy walks through the raindrops.
He really does. That's doing a Shadow of the Colossus movie. That could be good.
That's a quote from The Legend of Chun-Li, for those who don't know. Chris Klein says that line. Anyway.
Did you guys see the Max Payne movie?
I did.
Yeah.
Pretty bad.
Yeah. Pretty bad.
I mean, just looking over this list, like I'm looking at this Rotten Tomatoes list of 41 video game movies ranked worst best, and there are so many that are just outright awful, right? Like there's just so many that are really
and honestly,
bad.
Even the animated versions of you know, video game movies aren't always that great. There is a great anime Street Fighter movie from the 90s that I think is a lot of fun, but also kind of messy as hell. So yeah.
Well, Devinder, you've mentioned the Sonic movie a couple times. Jeff Cannata, have you seen the trailer for the new Sonic movie?
I haven't. I have seen the poster.
Jeff,
I think this is one you
wish you see that, because you kept interrupting me to saying like, oh, maybe it'll be good. You really need to see the trailer for this movie.
I guarantee you that it will not ruin your experience of the Sonic movie to watch.
No, I know that. I'm not worried about my Sonic experience particularly. I just haven't. I don't watch trailers. I haven't watched it. But I did see the poster, and I saw the edited poster that somebody was like, this is how it should look real quick. And it was way better. And, you know, they said they're going back to the drawing board and they're redoing the look of Sonic in that movie. So who knows?
Yeah, there's no way that can be a good redo, by the way, because they're still rushing to meet this release date. So it is one VFX studio that's basically being worked to the bone now to kind of fix this mess. So
Jim Carrey is Dr. Robotnik. That's exciting.
Yeah,
I agree. I think it's interesting that Jim Carrey is Dr. Robotnik, but the people who made Detective Pikachu basically came out and said, we would not be able to achieve what they are saying they are going to try to achieve, which is change the entire look of Sonic.
It sounds insane.
In 3 months before the movie comes out. Because it's like, you need people to like hit these marks.
It's just going to be like a wireframe. Just like a really low red wireframe running around.
It just shows to me a complete lack of confidence in your vision for the movie. If you're like, hey, this is what we've envisioned it at. It doesn't look like the video game, but we really believe in it. Oh, you all hate it. Okay, we'll change it. You know,
just looking at that trailer, Jeff, like it is, I think the care and the work that was put into like Detective Pikachu to really fully realize this world. I can't really see any of that in the Sonic thing other than him saying gotta go fast. Like that's pretty much it. I think some of the casting is pretty good too, because it's who's playing Sonic? It's that guy from Parks and Rec, right?
Ben Schwartz. He's awesome.
He's
very talented dude.
I'm looking forward to seeing that movie. I think it will be an enjoyable romp in the vein of 2018's Robin Hood. So
I think we'll have to review that movie. But I will say, poor James Marsden. Poor James Marsden. Once again, saddled with a CG like buddy in what looks to be a pretty bad kids movie. So yeah,
I like the Robin Hood is the scale now upon which Dave Chen reviews all movies.
Yeah, this movie, Detective Pikachu, gets two Robin Hoods, and I'm hoping Sonic will get four. So, all right.
Imagine Pokemon, but with bows and arrows.
Yes, that's right. That's right. All right, folks, let's wrap it up. You can find more episodes of this podcast at slashfilmcast.com. Email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com. This episode was produced by Baby Zhang. The intro music is from adamwarrock.com. Our spoiler bumper comes from filmmaker Kyle Hillinger. Stay tuned to hear what we'll be discussing next week. In the meantime, Devendra Hardware, where can you find more of your work on the internet this week?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter at Devendra. I write about tech and gadget.com. And I'm also doing a tech podcast at nomoretech.net. I just talked about the Oculus Gear, all the new Oculus Rift stuff, basically. Not the Gear. Was it the Rift Quest and the Rift Quest. S? Rift S is a really bad name. Those are pretty cool things. So go check out that episode, too.
How about you, Jeff Cannata?
I will say it again. Please check out The Dungeon Run. I'm really proud of it. It is a live play Dungeons and Dragons show where I am the Dungeon Master, leading a group of intrepid adventurers through the many crazy goings-on inside this world I made up. So you can find that on YouTube, The Dungeon Run, or on as an audio podcast wherever you get this show. But also live Wednesday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific time at caffeine.tv/The Dungeon Run. I also do a show about video games called DLC. You can find that at 5by5.tv/DLC. And you can always follow me on Twitter at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T.
You can subscribe to get emails from me at davechen.net/letters. And also, I'm making several YouTube videos a month at youtube.com/DaveChensky. That's Dave Chen, SKY. Next week, we'll be reviewing John Wick 3, Parabellum. Really excited to discuss that movie with you. I've heard it's better than John Wick 1 and 2, which...
Yeah, I want to know what Parabellum means. So, yeah, looking forward to that.
Pretty sure it's kind of gun. But, it should be a good discussion.
He has a pair of bellums.
That was rough, Jeff. You can listen to that review next week here on the Slash Filmcast. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.